essentially what we do is you can think of it as self-service automation accomplished through primarily speech recognition. So if you look at companies that utilize websites or other things in terms of a self-service strategy, our goal is to make voice an additional channel to that self-service automation so that clients can use our systems to gain access to information, conduct business, complete transactions.
Right. So it's basically the IVR story. Why don't we start with applications? Because these discussions can tend to get really abstract. So, I'm just going to read off the ones that you've listed as packaged applications, right? So this one is interesting. You have something you call an identifier, which is evidently an IVR-based password-changing application. Is that correct?
Right.
So why don't you talk about sort of how that works and then, what's happening on the back end to enable that.
Okay. So we've tried to create a few applications that are specifically geared toward a horizontal market, that are reusable, that allow the interface into client databases, but essentially go through a series of questions to identify who the caller claims to be, what is their claim, and then we authenticate based on either knowledge or speaker verification that yes, they are indeed or not who they claim to be.
So when you say speaker verification, is the point here that this is multi-factor authentication and one of the factors is in fact the voice print?
Yes.
Now, is this in use anywhere that I've never run into this, but obviously it's happening out there in the world somewhere. Where is this being used?
It's actually being used at Ameritrade, and we have done press releases with Ameritrade, and Stephanie, our PR person, is nodding that, yes, I can tell you their name. So.
Really? Oh, because I actually haven't encountered Ameritrade, which I have not visited in a long time, so maybe, if I go there, where would I find this this feature?
They actually implemented it when they purchased Daytech.
Okay.
And so I'll be honest, I'm an Ameritrade client, but I'm an old Ameritrade client. I have never accessed it via the telephone either.
Okay.
But I believe it was given as an option to the Daytech customers that were converted, and they went through an enrollment process, and it's one of the largest customer-facing verification deployments that's available.
Now, the voice print is subject to replay attack if it's captured, right?
Actually, the voice print itself, what gets created is not anything that exists in terms of a WAV file that could be reverse engineered. It's just a series, it's a numerical representation that's housed in a database. You could break in and steal all of the voice prints from any company that's out there, and you have something that's absolutely worthless.
Okay, but I mean, if I speak the magic phrase on the one hand, or if I play you a recording of the magic phrase on the other hand, you listening aren't going to know the difference, right? So, in other words, if that...
Well, it depends on how you captured the recording.
Okay, let's talk about that a little, because that's interesting.
Well, if you capture the recording using a high-quality microphone, it's a digital recording, and you play that over the phone, you might be able to spoof a system. Though sometimes they're still able to detect fraudulence because some of the systems actually say this is too close to the original, so it must be a fake. There's a certain amount of variance each time we speak a word.
Interesting. We've sort of like gone down a rat hole here. This is, this is extremely interesting, but I want to kind of back up and get the larger context as well. Can we kind of broaden this out to the kinds of services that your platform makes available to developers, the kinds of tools that are used to build these IVR kinds of applications, and then the environment that this all fits into in terms of, yours or other people's application servers in terms of standards like Salt and VoiceXML and things like that?
So to start at a platform level, we have platforms that support both VoiceXML 2.0 standards as well as the Salt standard and the Microsoft speech servers. From a development environment...
Well, can I just, most people are as vaguely familiar with those two things as I am. So, I mean, to prepare for this call, I went back and kind of refreshed my memory as to what's going on. And
that doesn't entitle you to ask hard questions.
Well, you know, it seems like we can't have anything in this industry without a war between two competing standards, right? And you know, it's almost ludicrous, right? So it takes you 5 minutes to sort of get to the members page of the SALT form on the web on the one hand, and the members page of the VoiceXML form on the other hand, and kind of, you know, the icons tell the story, right? So in fact, I'm on those pages right now, and I'm looking at SALT forum, Microsoft, Cisco, Intel, Philips, ScanSoft, and Comverse, and on the VoiceXML side, AT&T, Lucent, IBM, Motorola, HP, Oracle, Verizon, a couple of others, right? So, I mean, sort of what jumps out at me is, phone companies, right, versus not. So, I don't really know anything about the politics, and obviously you guys have to play both sides of the fence, but I'm just kind of curious, you know, just if it's possible to sort of condense this into just a brief overview of what the situation is.
Well, it's possible for me to give you my opinion of the of kind of the whole situation and where it stands.
I'd love to hear it.
So, the first thing is that I try and tell clients that, you know, there was a lot of publicity 2 years ago around VoiceXML and how it was going to revolutionize voice automation, and that you had to have VoiceXML to do speech recognition and a lot of other things. Well, the bottom line is all of those justifications for doing it were hype, because we actually had speech recognition systems literally years before the first VoiceXML companies were in existence, and these were very sophisticated systems.
Mm-hmm.
What VoiceXML as a standard did do was introduce some level of application portability,
mm-hmm.
and it also introduced the fact that now, all of a sudden, where traditionally IVR sales were call center driven, designed, developed by call center managers that managed the agents that were in the seat, a telephony-based decision, now you see it moving into the IT infrastructure where companies that have made millions of dollars of investment into how do I service my web page and make this data available and accessible 24/7 through a visual media, how do I extend that into other channels? And really, they were looking to extend it into other channels because they'd made this big investment, but not everyone had or was willing to use a PC with an internet connection to do all of this wonderful self-service. Everyone still, for whatever reason, still uses the phone.
Right, right. So what was the timing of SALT versus VoiceXML?
SALT came just after the second, well, it was after the ratification of VoiceXML 1 and prior to the ratification of 2. It was when version 2 was in discussions.
Okay.
So what was going to be included or not. So VoiceXML was a keen idea, and there are, you know, depending on who you ask, Motorola was a founding contributor, and there are some others that were involved there. An early version was called VoxML, I think. And,
oh, yeah.
And some things that kind of went by the wayside. And some other earlier attempts, you know, were WAP phones and other things. How do we take this and turn it into something that can be digested by phones?
Yes.
And the reality is it was trying to accomplish, I think, what HTML did for the web.
You're speaking about SALT now?
I'm speaking about VoiceXML in general. That was the concept behind it. Now, the SALT tags were even more analogous to HTML because that's the paradigm that Microsoft wanted to leverage in terms of how you serve up these pages, how could you make it multimodal, and it was much less a programming language that's linear. VoiceXML tends to look more like linear programming code.
Yeah, that's my impression. Just kind of eyeballing some examples of the two side-by-side, I get the impression that the SALT strategy was to exist as an XML namespace that was embeddable in or could be woven into XML or probably more likely HTML documents, right? Whereas VoiceXML looked like its own sort of standalone thing. Is that a fair characterization?
Right, its own syntax, and yes, your impression was exactly
correct. Okay. So, all right. So, anyway, we have these two paths. You, of course, simply have to support both of them, I assume, right? So, you, I guess, abstract away from those differences in your platform. Is that right?
Well, yes. So we developed our own Voice XML browser that is adherent to the specification so that we can interpret Voice XML documents that either are developed within using our development tool or developed with any other tool that complies with the spec. So that browser just takes and interprets that language and turns that into instructions for the IVR, for lack of a better word.
Okay, so it's so, and likewise on the SALT side, right? So whatever...
The notable exception there, and that is that Microsoft provides the SALT browser.
Right.
And so we license that, but the same underlying technology that takes those instructions and handles the telephony and the call control and all the other pieces, that's the same for us.
Okay, so you got, in effect, you got the parsing technology from them. In the case of Voice XML, you built your own. Either way, you pull it up into some sort of neutral description language, which is what drives your IVR system.
Actually, it's the output that ends up being neutral. So the language, we don't convert it to a meta language, but we take that language and the instructions are in something that the lower level platform can digest. So you can think of the architecture in terms of layers.
Okay, so you're like an IVR virtual machine, right? And what you're saying is that
we are a virtual and physical machine.
Okay, and what ultimately gets emitted by either of these things are instructions that drive your VM.
You are correct.
Okay.
Exactly. So, essentially, yes, we have a strategic relationship with Microsoft, so we do support the Microsoft speech server and the SALT browser.
And what is it? What is a SALT browser exactly?
It is the equivalent of, it's the voice equivalent of Internet Explorer, for lack of a better analogy. You know how Internet Explorer takes the web documents and converts that for presentation on your screen?
Mm-hmm.
A SALT browser or a Voice XML browser does the exact same thing with the documents that are served up, only it converts it into something that's digestible by voice.
Okay. And since I did look some at the Microsoft Speech Server a while ago, this kind of gets into another interesting area for me, which is the extent to which it is possible to build an application once for multimodal deployment, right? So, in other words, I believe there are some capabilities in the Microsoft Speech Server and the tools that are associated with that that enable you to, you know, write web pages, you know, that can be expressed as, you know, voice menus.
Right,
or that can be expressed visually from a single stream of source, right? But there are also pretty severe limitations, obviously, on how all-encompassing.
There are limitations on how all-encompassing that could be, but that was their intent. It is inherently more suited for multimodal deployment, I believe, than Voice XML.
Okay.
Originally, that was what Microsoft kind of touted this as being the goal. Was for the multimodal applications. I think they backed away from that primarily because there's not a lot of consumer devices really ready to take advantage of truly multimodal interactions. What we think of today in terms of multimodal is I've got a phone that I can also check my email on.
Yes.
Well, the reality is that happens to be a device that supports two media. It's not really multimodal in terms of the interaction.
In terms of using those two together, right? I get what you mean, and I remember the examples that they gave being ones in which you could, on the one hand, choose from a drop-down list on a web page with your mouse, and alternatively, you could speak the choice, right?
Right.
And those were working side by side. So you're saying that was kind of the original vision that's maybe been diluted somewhat as reality set in.
Yeah, I think that's still the vision. I just think that they realize, and I think they probably realized it all along, they realize that people are going to start with speech first, and as consumer devices catch up with the ability to take advantage of these two things simultaneously, that people can build and add on to this. And that's why.
So now you say you support the Microsoft Speech Server. Can we talk about what that relationship is, i.e., do you have your own standalone IVR server as well, and then you can integrate if someone already has a Microsoft, you know, ASP.NET environment, you can integrate with Speech Server, but you don't require it, or what's the deal?
Well, it means that we basically sell it as a solution. So Microsoft you can acquire a Microsoft speech server, and our system will utilize that for speech recognition, just in the same vein as, in terms of speech recognition technology, we could utilize ScanSoft ASR or Nuance ASR.
Okay, but if I had none of those, then your system would suffice standalone?
If you have none of those, then you're basically relegated to a DTMF system, a touch tone system.
Oh. Oh, okay. So you're intended to be used in concert with some such speech server as the ones you mentioned.
Yes. For ASR to occur, we do not have our own ASR engine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Basically integrate that.
I gotcha.
The way I best describe that is that a speech server is kind of a theoretical exercise unless you find a company like Intervoice that takes advantage of that and makes that a commercially viable deployment. We're what takes it from being a standalone entity and turns it into an application that an end user can take advantage of.
Okay, so now we should spell out for me, because I just got a little bit confused here, what it is specifically that your voice server is adding to the equation.
Okay, so a speech server, whether it's from Microsoft, ScanSoft, or Nuance, does not connect directly to telephony on its own. Meaning they won't take a call, they can't handle the call progression, the call transfers, the CTI.
Okay. So you're actually providing telephony infrastructure here
to
the speech server environment.
So whether it's telephony or IP-based, it terminates into an Intervoice system. The application could be driven from an application server. So the documents are being served up and interpreted at the browser level on our system.
Mm-hmm.
We take the action necessary and instigate, if you will, an instance of speech recognition as needed on the system.
Okay.
So we'll take that information and say, oh, now I need to recognize this digit string because I'm at an ask for number scenario to capture an account number.
Okay.
Send that utterance off to the ASR engine, it's processed, it's recognized, and a value is returned, and then the logic progresses within the application. We build that application as well as the infrastructure.
Okay.
It's very hard to do without a piece of paper or a whiteboard.
Yeah, well, I'm on your website, so, you know, presumably there could be diagrams and stuff here to look at, but I don't know. Should I be looking somewhere?
You know, I'll be honest, I doubt that they're out there, and I don't visit our external website enough to be able to direct you.
Okay.
Tell our marketing folks that. I'll swear, I'll disavow any knowledge.
Okay. So maybe if we kind of circle back to applications, we can find some more ways to drill down into this. Now, did I understand it to be the case that you guys are behind the Amtrak system?
Yes, that runs on our platform.
Okay, so let's talk about the architecture there, how it's set up.
Okay. What essentially exists there is the calls coming through their call center environment hit their switch. They're greeted by our IVR system. The application essentially walks the caller through whatever information they need. In this case, it's train schedule information.
And the speech recognition component of that application is running how?
That is running on ScanSoft ASR.
Okay.
And it's on a separate server.
Okay.
So, caller comes in, they want information about trains departing Union Station to Penn Station at a certain time. Those items are that call flow is mapped out with prompts that are played to the caller to get them to respond. Their responses are captured, sent off to the ASR engine to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
A transaction goes against the database to pull the appropriate information about the train or schedule selected, and then that's turned into recorded speech, concatenated recorded speech, and played back to the caller.
Okay, and the flow of logic is happening inside of your engine, and the tool that was used to develop that flow is your tool? Is that the way to think about this?
Yes. So the tool that was used in this case is our tool called Envision.
Okay.
We have another version called Envision Studio.
Okay.
That's the latest and greatest. and it allows you to develop the code, in this case, either in our legacy proprietary environment or in a VoiceXML standard compliant manner. So you could use our tool to develop an application that runs on our platform or on someone else's compliant platform.
Okay.
It's a GUI-based drag-and-drop tool. It's based at the desktop. Has a lot of pre-built components in it to allow you to do recurring functions like capture date, capture digits, and other things where you can specify, I need to capture a 10-digit string. And that sets it up so that the recognizer knows to look for 10 digits and not 8 or not 12.
Uh-huh. Now, if I were to reduce that graph that was constructed in the GUI Builder to a textual representation of the program, would that or could that look like VoiceXML, for example? Or, I mean, is there some other proprietary or standard way of representing the program as text?
No, it actually would generate VoiceXML, and you can open up a window and edit the VoiceXML text natively.
Okay. So from this perspective, the most useful textual representation indeed would be VoiceXML, because it is a more self-contained and complete programmatic representation of the logic. Is that correct?
In this instance, what we've described is you could think of Envision Studio as a productivity tool allowing icons and drag-and-drop development methodologies to be used in order to complete the development process. The underlying code, if this were in a Microsoft environment, we would use either Visual Studio with the speech SDK or VB.NET with the speech SDK components there.
Okay. And so in that case, the textual representation of the program would be C# or VB.NET?
Right.
Oh, okay. And what would your role be in the IDE, in the development environment, in that case?
Well, in those cases, so we offer a complete set of professional services. Speech is different than web development, and there's a certain amount of expertise needed to design a good speech recognition application.
Mm-hmm.
One of the common mistakes I think that people make is they think, well, I've got a web page, so I'll just serve that up in voice. And the analogy that I like to use there of why that's inappropriate is you wouldn't watch the TV news if the anchor read you the newspaper. You expect the TV news to figure out what's important, give you a 20-second soundbite, and synthesize the information that's presented in a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
You pick up the New York Times because you want to read an in-depth version of what was occurring, and you want the background details. So in that case, your choice of media dictates your expectation of how you're going to interact with, in this case, the service, which is either a television or a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put that same model onto voice versus web page, when people pick up the phone, they don't expect to see, for example, if you're searching for a flight, visually, if you do that over the web, there's nothing wrong with presenting 12 different flight options, departures and return times, all in a list. Well, playing those to a caller in an audio format is completely inappropriate. People can't remember that much. They typically don't want to be sitting there trying to write them down in a long list of 12. So your expectation is that the media, your choice of media has established expectations of how that data is going to be reformatted and presented to you.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you don't directly provide speech recognition, but work with a bunch of partners like ScanSoft, Nuance, Microsoft.
We actually resell their components.
You resell their components and provide a uniform layer on top of them.
That's correct.
Right. Now, what would you characterize as ways in which that layer is not simply normalizing, but is also adding value to those underlying components?
Well, in order to reproduce what we do, you would have to have something, a system that would control a telephony card. So a card that actually controlled how the T1 or other telephony lines and protocols terminate into the system.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to build that to allow transfers. How do you connect back to the switch, how do you pass the protocols and other things to transfer it. You would have to build something to take the application instructions and pass those on to a CTI system. You'd have to build something that would report or log the information so that you could see the call progression.
Right.
What happened with the caller, how successful were they at completing their goals.
Right. So there's a set of CTI-oriented things, and I get that, but it sounded like you were also talking about, if you will, a sort of higher level of application development support.
Well, the other expertise from a service level that we provide is that we essentially gather the business rules, we engage our clients in a consultation to gather their business requirements, what are their objectives that they're trying to accomplish. We turn that into a call flow, both in terms of the prompts that are played and as well as the back-end transactions that are done. So we actually develop that application start to finish. So both the customer facing what the client or end user hears, as well as any back-end integration or middleware needed to connect to host systems, web application servers such as WebSphere or BEA WebLogic or others, to take that data and to turn it into a format that's applicable for voice.
Okay, so now you're talking about professional services as opposed to packaged tools and applications.
Yes.
But you offer both
right.
kinds of things, right?
Yes.
Okay. I guess we've talked about a lot of things. What didn't we get to?
We didn't talk about, I think originally there were some questions around the use of usability testing and other things to how we enhance the caller experience. And the reason I think that's important is the caller experience or the end user experience directly translates into the organization's business goals, either achieving them or not achieving them.
Mm-hmm.
So in the example with Amtrak, people like the voice. Well, that voice didn't happen by accident. A lot of work went into determining what characteristics should the voice display, everything from age demographics to how the phrases and words that are selected, they're done with a reason because you're trying to evoke an image and you're trying to make people comfortable with using the system.
So are you saying that the image of Julie was constructed by people at your company, right? That it's, you know, from a presentation and a marketing standpoint.
Well, I was trying to say, really, from a broader context, that any automated system needs to have a personality developed on purpose.
Okay. And is part of what you do helping people figure out how to do the development of
yes.
personalities?
Yes.
So you have like psychologists and theatrical people and things
we
like that?
We have no psychologists. We do have some people that qualify as pretty theatrical, but it comes down to more of a marketing standpoint. So we try and engage a client's marketing department to understand who their callers are, why are they calling, and what are their expectations.
Right.
We take that and try and match that up into voice characteristics. And you can read a lot about persona development and other things, and I think really it boils down to you're selecting an age demographic, a formality of the prompts, so whether or not it's going to be casual or very formal, very strict. You're selecting gender, and you're trying to convey something that's consistent with the image of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And
So this persona development is actually part of the portfolio of services that your company offers?
Right. It's part of that design process. Remember when I was talking about the TV news versus the newspaper and how you have to format that data?
Yeah.
Essentially, that's the balancing act that our voice user interface design engineers accomplish. They take what an organization wants to accomplish, which is the shortest possible call duration, the highest possible automation rate, and the highest amount of customer satisfaction. Those are typically the goals that an organization has.
Mm-hmm.
And they balance that with what an end caller or end user needs, which is enough instruction to feel comfortable, so that may lengthen the call.
Mm-hmm.
Easy access to a representative in case their call doesn't fit something that, you know, the self-service system is designed to handle. but not so easy that people won't try to use it. So you want to keep the satisfaction level up, but you don't want them to feel trapped in the system.
Right.
And so our design engineers try and take end-user goals, organization goals, and create a balance. And that balance, for lack of a better word, comes to life, if you will, with the personality of the system and how the scripting is done and how the logic flows.
That's very interesting. And presumably this gets tuned over time as people get more experience with how people use this stuff. And
exactly. Yes, we tune these. It's just like a web page. You wouldn't want to leave your web page static. You're going to want to refine it based on what options people select and what do you hear from end users that they want to have access to.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what do you see as the kinds of opportunities for packaged applications going forward, things that haven't been done historically but are becoming possible and that we may see more of in the near future?
Well, that's a good question. I would say that what we're trying to find is that area where, if you think about how, if you look at micro, to use another Microsoft analogy, you look at Microsoft products, whether you're in Excel or Office or PowerPoint, you look for file, save, edit, cut, paste, format. All of those things are consistent regardless of the tool that you're using, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what I call a horizontal function. Doesn't matter which application you're in, you want that use to be the same. If you look at this in terms of a voice scenario, horizontal applications are applications where companies don't find a competitive advantage by being the world's best at allowing you to change your address. Right? There's no market there to differentiate that. In fact, the opposite is true. It's better off if Discover, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express all change addresses the exact same way so that over time, anyone holding any one of those credit cards that needs to change an address, they become familiar with the process. And oh, by the way, when their utility company does it, they too do it in the same way. And then magazine subscriptions do it. They do it in the same way so that user familiarity leads to a higher automation completion. In other words, they don't want to be different.
Mm-hmm.
To me, those kinds of opportunities for a packaged application, those are high. And it falls into things like address, things like identification, password reset, things that cross multiple industries. From
right.
That,
and things for which voice is an appropriate
correct
medium, or in some cases the preferred medium, right?
Right.
And that's an interesting question as to when voice is a preferred medium for data driven interaction, right?
Well, it is an interesting question, but I would say that there is, all the data that I read suggests that there's really no end to people wanting to conduct transactions over the phone. It's kind of like the debit card phenomenon. Debit cards have not, I don't believe, you know, resulted in the death of checks. They've reduced maybe the overall amount of checks that go to financial institutions, but banks still spend a tremendous amount of money processing physical paper items, physical checks.
Mm-hmm.
But what has gone up is the number of financial transactions that occur at point of sale, whether that's through a check that's read and an electronic check created, or through the use of a debit card and then credit card and other things. So I look at the web and phone, they're not so much substitutes, because depending on your circumstances, you may choose one or the other, no matter what your preferences are. But really what that means is companies have to deal with more interactions with their clients. Clients have more ways to interact. It's our job to make sure that they interact successfully and profitably for the organization.
Right. Which reminds me of, we talked a bit about the multimodality of the approach taken by Microsoft with Speech Server. But I wanted to circle back on one point, which is that in addition to the possibility of being able to interact with a web page through direct manipulation or speech, you know, there's just this underlying notion that you'd like to develop an interface, a through the web interface, one time, you know, that would be at least minimally accessible by phone, right? So, you know, I normally, I mean, if I had my druthers, I'd go to the webpage and interact with it directly. But I happen to be in my car on my cell phone, right? You know, and so to what extent is it possible to provide, you know, in a relatively automatic way, at least minimal access to functions on a web page out of a development environment, you know, that is not dual track, right? In other words, you know, that I don't have to, you know, build it once for the web and then put on my IVR hat and go through the app and make a bunch of tweaks, right? You know, because in any situation where you're required to do things two different ways, it ultimately is a huge impediment, and generally then it just won't happen unless there's an extreme motivation to make it happen. Right?
Well, I guess I'm going to take a slightly different view, and I may be biased, but I agree with you that you need to leverage as much of the development as you can. I draw a different demarcation than the one that you did.
Mm-hmm.
The demarcation that I draw is at the application server level, when the data is being served up to either be presented to a web page, at that point that data in that format can be equally presented to a voice system. That's the demarcation of commonality. And I think that companies that try to skimp either on web page development to make a very clean and user-friendly presentation layer via the web, or a very clean and aesthetically pleasing voice user interface, if they try to skimp at that presentation layer, they've made a critical and strategic error.
Mm-hmm.
Where they want to make the investment in the commonality is to make that data available. Once that data is available, if it's in an XML format, the cost of the presentation layer relative to the rest of the investment of that infrastructure is minimal.
Mm-hmm. Now, the point is well taken, and this is actually a point I've been making for probably years now, which is that ultimately it's just a historical accident that we have so much presentation logic directly intertwined with the production of HTML, and that you know, exactly what the web services philosophy is to separate those things, right? So that in fact, you know, in my view, essentially, I mean, if things were, you know, if everyone could just flip a switch and make this happen tomorrow, we'd all be better off. To have the case be that every web-facing application ultimately is encapsulated as neutral XML, right?
Yeah.
Which is then, you know, rendered by HTML production technology, but also could be rendered by voice production technology in ways that, you know...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's no different than the spaghetti code, you know, in COBOL, and, you know, when I started at EDS years ago. You know, theoretically, we should have made all those host interactions in a modular form that could have been called through multiple applications, even though there's no analogous presentation layer. The principle was the same. Did we violate that? Regularly.
Mm-hmm.
We embedded the access and the data to whatever we were trying to accomplish, and it always has and probably always will cost companies millions. And that really is at the point where standards themselves don't solve problems for companies. The implementations of standards can help accelerate a lot of things and allow companies to be efficient and take advantage of it. But implementing a voice XML infrastructure for some clients, you know, won't be the fix unless they do exactly what you said, and that's take some time in figuring out how am I going to make my data available and then share that data across multiple channels.
Yeah. So, you know, nothing new here, just plain old common sense, but it's hard to come by.
Common sense that's incredibly uncommon.
Okay. Well, so this might be a good place to wind up. I've really enjoyed this. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Good. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you about it. I always enjoy opportunities to speak about this. So.